महाभूतानि पञ्चेभ
महाभूतानि पञ्चेभ
मूढको भीमरुन्नव
मूढको भीमरुन्नव
तन्मत्रानि च भवन्ति
तन्मत्रानि च भवन्ति
यन्दतीनि मथानि मे
यन्दतीनि मथानि मे
महाभूतानि पञ्चेभ elements. Pancha.
Pancha.
Five.
Eva.
Eva. Exactly.
Exactly.
U.
U.
Earth.
Earth.
Papa.
Papa.
Water.
Water.
Agni.
Agni.
Fire.
Fire.
Marut.
Marut.
Air.
Air.
Nabha.
Nabha.
Ether.
Ether.
Tatmachanhi.
Tatmachanhi.
The subtle elements.
Cha.
Cha. Also. Tavanti,
Tavanti,
so many.
So many.
Ganda adinhi,
Gandadini,
smell and so on.
Smell and so on.
Taste, color, touch, sound.
Taste, color, touch, sound.
Matanhi,
Matanhi,
considered.
Considered.
Me, by me.
By me.
There are five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. There are also five subtle elements, smell, taste, colour, touch, and sound. So, this is a continuation from especially yesterday's verse. So the person that got it, the Kapila speaking. So yesterday's verse, text number 11, we heard the aggregate elements, namely the five gross elements, the five subtle elements, four internal senses, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five outward organs of action are known as pradhan. So here, then there is what are those, gross elements and subtle elements, etc., are being described. So today's verse describes the Mahabhutani, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the five subtle elements, which is Tatmatrani, smell, taste, colour, touch, and sound. I'll just read the next verse. Indriyani Dishashtruktam Tvagvigdra Rasana Nasika Vakro Charano Medram. The senses for acquiring knowledge are explained, and the organs for action number 10, namely the auditory sense, the sense of taste, the tactile sense, the sense of sight, the sense of smell, the active organ for speaking, the active organs for working, and those for travelling, generating, and evacuating. So they are verse 11, what has been described in summary, is explained a little bit more, and in tomorrow's verse you'll hear a little bit about the internal subtle senses, namely the mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness, which will take a little bit more explanation. Therefore, there's a nice purport that goes with that, but I won't go that far today. I'm going to read a little bit about today being the disappearance of Srinivas Acharya. I'm going to read some of his pastimes. So, our Acharyas, or spiritual masters, Of course, Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada is coming in a disciplic succession, whereby the knowledge that Krishna spoke to Arjuna 5,000 years ago comes down in a chain of disciplic succession all the way down through to Prabhupada, to the current gurus, and we are speaking exactly what was spoken by Krishna 5,000 years ago, and in fact here by Lord Kapila even longer ago, that exact same message is being transmitted by the Parampara system. So we are going to be fortunate, and of course this is the difference between the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and practically every other religious movement, in that practically every other religious movement is suffering for want of having a proper disciplic succession. And what is happening in the world is that because scriptures have been misinterpreted, whether by Christian scriptures, the Muslim scriptures, the Judaic, the Buddhist, because they're being misinterpreted, then people lose faith in them. And because the scriptures are being changed and tampered with, people lose faith in them. So people understand, you're speaking something that's from such and such a shastra, but this is actually your opinion, it's not this. So people, what they have done in today's world is people think that shastra is something to be discarded. And the difficulty there is that there's an underlying principle in shastra which they're discarding with that. Now the principle of shastra is this, that for instance, if I had to come in here and speak something on the 24 elements of material creation, the soul and the time, and try and just work it out in my mind and then speak it to you, I'd have a lot of problems. And you'd probably have more problems. We're all crazy in the process. If I had to somehow, you know, get in here, I'm giving class, let me ring around and see if I can call a few people and find out a little bit about Srinivasacharya, see if we can say. So therefore what happens is that knowledge is instead of everyone who ever speaks on knowledge having to gather the knowledge themselves, it's written down. There you go, the work's done for you. Just here's the history of Srinivasacharya, here's the subject matter of the 24 elements, like that. So it makes it easy. So what happens in this world, people don't realize, but when they discard shastra, they're also throwing out the principle that knowledge is very easily transferred when it's written down and standardized. See? And that principle they're losing along with the shastra. So, but we're very fortunate that in our movement we have the disciplic succession, that the shastra is delivered by the guru just like a postman delivers a mail. When the postman delivers, you know, a love letter, he doesn't open it and read it and think, oh, you know, she's not going to like that. Let me just change that a little bit. You know, or, you know, they just deliver the mail. They don't add to it, they don't delete. So this is the disciplic succession. And this is what Prabhupada did. Therefore, we have Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam as it is. So we're going to hear a little bit about one of the personalities in our disciplic succession, Srinivasacharya. Now, if we go back to Krishna, Krishna spoke to Arjuna. Prabhupada says that Srila Vyasadeva heard from Arjuna in this sense, that what Krishna spoke to Arjuna, then Srila Vyasadeva heard that through Narada Muni. And Srila Vyasadeva compiled that knowledge. And then from Srila Vyasadeva, there is a chain of gurus coming all the way down. Most prominently, 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who is non-different from Krishna, presented the same knowledge, but highlighted the essential knowledge that we need to understand from Vedic scriptures. So he's giving the same knowledge, but because people have lost faith in scripture, they don't have time to read all the scripture. Therefore, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did was he said, well, let's take the most important things you need to hear and just present it in the easiest way it is to understand, and at least give that. So just like, for instance, if a child, you know, for those who have children, if you have the kitchen, just like in our kitchen, children don't go in there. In people's homes, quite often children go in and out of the kitchen. Now, the most important essential knowledge to give to a child, because they're not in the mood to hear everything about what goes on in the kitchen, about cooking, cleaning, all the utensils, they need to know two or three different things. And that's all they need to know. And then they can function in that kitchen according to their level. What is that? Knives are sharp, fire is hot, and don't play in the kitchen when I'm cooking. Now, apart from that, little children don't need to, you know, as they get a little older, you might teach them a little bit more. So it's like that. Sometimes the main thing you need to know, at least then you can function and keep yourself safe. We're in Kali Yuga, the most degraded age, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given that knowledge. Don't have illicit sex, don't gamble, you know, don't take intoxication, and don't eat meat. Then you can function safely. And what are your activities? Chant the holy names of the Lord. You know, hear the scriptures being passed down by the spiritual master. Have some nice prasadam, sing and dance. Think of Krishna, be God conscious like that. Very easy. Don't be all consumed with too many rituals and too much philosophy and too much this and too much that. Do those things, you'll function. You'll go back to Godhead. So that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's contribution there is very, very significant by highlighting those main things for everyone. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's taught us that the main scriptures we should concentrate on is Bhagavad Gita, Srila Bhagavatam, and then what's that? I'm not getting to that. Then the for a more let's say postgraduate study for those who have understood Gita, Srila Bhagavatam, there are the Chaitanya Charitamrita, so the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his full teaching, expanded teaching, and where he establishes the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the essential teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and those essential teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we learned from the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings, they were categorized and systemized. That knowledge was systemized by his direct disciples, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, six Goswamis, headed by Rupa and Sanatan, and then Raghunath Das Goswami, and then there's Raghunath Bhatta, Gopalabhata Goswami, and Jiva Goswami. So, Srinivasacharya is a direct disciple of Gopalabhata Goswami. Gopalabhata Goswami, since all these Goswamis were understood to be, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself, the Goswamis were Manjaris, or young gopis. In other words, that were manifestations of Krishna's spiritual energy, personified manifestations, individual. spiritual energy, his special energy, and they they had showed us two different aspects of devotional service. One is we can meditate upon our eternal form in the spiritual world, and the other is how we do some practical service in this world for the benefit of liberating the conditioned souls. So the Goswamis, they wrote down the essential teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which represent the essence of the Vedas. The essence of the Vedas being, one should understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one's eternal relationship with Him. One should then know how to act upon that eternal relationship and serve the Lord with love. And by doing that, one will develop pure love and transcendental ecstatic sentiments and emotions. So those three essential principles of the Vedas were taught. So coming in the line after the Goswamis was Krishnadas Kaviraj, who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He heard from Raghunath Das Goswami. The next acharya in line almost was Narottam Das Bakur, because he was Narottam Das Bakur used to serve Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He was an intimate friend of Lokanath Das Goswami and the Diksha Guru. So, Narottam Das Bakur's relationship with our disciple succession is a Shiksha relationship. Through Krishnadas Kaviraj, his Shiksha Guru, who was a friend of his Diksha Guru. But Srinivas Acharya is, although a contemporary with Narottam Das Bakur, he's contemporary in the sense that they're the same age. They both learned from Jiva Goswami, along with Shyamananda Prabhu. But he is considered technically after Srinivasacharya in the disciplic succession. Before. Srinivasacharya is just before Narottam Das Bakur in the disciplic succession, because he was directly initiated by Gopalabhadra Goswami. So his spiritual master is the param guru of Narottam Das Bakur. In our disciplic succession. So now Srinivasacharya, I'll just before I describe some of his pastimes, these are the main things that we understand his contributions. He led the first book distribution party. When the six Goswamis who were residing in Vrindavan, when they compiled the essence of all the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the Vedic scriptures, they had many, many books which filled a big cart. And Janakamata, after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from this world, Janakamata, the wife of consort of Nityananda Prabhu, who also had left the pain, she became one of the greatest acharyas amongst all the acharyas, and pretty much organized and headed up the preaching movement of Chaitanya. That's interesting, you know, that women should note this and men should note this as well. That, the, you know, perhaps the biggest acharya was a woman overseeing all the other acharyas and personalities, even overseeing all the Nityananda and like that. So she went, when she went to Vrindavan, she asked the ghost farms of Vrindavan, Rudrinsanath especially, that they should distribute the books that they have compiled, the Shastra, because she understood that Vaishnavism was becoming very widespread due to the influence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Although the sentiment was there, she understood that unless a devotee is more stable in their Krishna consciousness, and the Krishna consciousness movement protects its purity when the shastric understanding is also there. So for preaching purposes and for protecting the purity of the movement from all sorts of unwanted influences, the shastra is there. So what maintains the purity of a religious organization is the disciplic succession, the gurus, who and the central point is they're always speaking from the shastra. And then there are many sadhus who discuss back and forth, and so along with the various sadhus, the guru and the shastra, there are checks and balances which maintains the purity and the potency of the movement. So she wanted that the Goswamis distribute the books into Bengal and Orissa, places like that. And so Jiva Goswami personally instructed Srinivasacharya. Well, first he Narottam Das was first there for about a year, and then Srinivasacharya came and then joined under that instruction, and then Shyamananda Prabhu, or as he was known first, to be Krishna. So those three were the principal disciples of Jiva Goswami, who instructed them so that they could then take those books and distribute them in the main Vaishnava centres, and from there make the Vaishnavism spread and very, very stable.
Could be more.
Bengal, Orissa, and other places. So, therefore, you know, we say here that Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Prabhu, you know, they led the first book distribution party. And of course, what happened was that I'm summarising a lot of this, so time is running. What happened was that when the party got to a certain place, those three personalities, the books were stolen. Unbeknown to them, the king of this particular province was actually, he had working for him so many dacoits who would rob people of their valuables, and they used to use an astrologer. Astrologer would say, "Oh, there are some people coming, travellers coming, and they have something of such and such a value." And at this particular time, the astrologer said that what these persons have is more valuable than gold. So the king is thinking, "Oh, it must be all sorts of diamonds and rubies and something, different types of gems." So he sent his dacoits and they robbed them, and then they brought them to the king, and the king kept them in his palace. So there's one way they use astrology. But we don't want to give astrology a bad name, especially not my classes. But astrology was also used when Srinivasacharya was born. A different astrologer, said that here is a Mahapurush. He's a divinely empowered person. So, as you can see, And similarly with Srila Prabhupada, astrological calculations, and even with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can actually see astrologically that someone is a Supreme Personality of Godhead or someone is a divinely empowered person. So it is not just for karma and it is not just the material science that is used properly. That is a complete fallacy which is not supported by our scriptures. Just as you can read on paper some words and you can write whatever you want on there. Now, you know, I could have here the racing guide for the spring horse racing karma, and that would be very materialistic. But here, same piece of paper, same typewriter, same ink, you know, I have the pastimes of Srinivasa Acharya. So, astrology means that something has just been read. The only difference is you can write on paper or you can write a message in the sky. And the sky is the paper and the planets are is the pens, and a message is written. And those who know that language can, and you can read something transcendental, you can read something mundane. It's just something written. So, so Srinivasa Acharya, I'll read a little bit about this, it's pastime. But then, there's two pastimes I want to read, just briefly going through this one. And this pastime demonstrates how a devotee, executing the principles of the six Goswamis, teachings and nectar devotion, serve the Lord both externally by preaching Krishna consciousness, so they have an external mood according to the body they're in and the service they've been given, the mission that they've been given, and they have an internal service according to their eternal relationship with Krishna. In this case, Srinivasa Acharya was Mani Manjari. Yeah, I think Mani Manjari. And so he was actually, it was revealed to him by Gopalabhadra Goswami that he was one of the gopis, young gopis, Mani Manjari, who served Guna Manjari, who's also known as Ananga Manjari. Ananga Manjari is a very, very famous gopi. But one of the principal gopis in Uncle Manjari, and that was Gopalabhadra Goswami's eternal form. And Srinivasa Acharya was Mani Manjari, who always served in Uncle Manjari in the spiritual world. So they have an external and an internal service that they perform simultaneously if they come to that platform. And so, as we were saying, there are two things here. He led the first book distribution party, and we'll get back to how the books were stolen. He co-organised the first Gaupaneem Festival. So every year we had the Gaupaneem Festival, and that was organised by those personalities, Narottam, Srinivas, Samananda. So to this very day, those Gaupaneem Festivals come on. He developed elaborate techniques for Manjari Sadhana. So that method of meditating upon one's internal, eternal form of the Lord, those techniques were developed by Srinivasa Acharya. And, you know, a lot of that comes out in the writings of personalities like Srila Vishwanatha Chakrabarti Thakur and Bhaktivinoda. And he originated the Manohar Shoy style of kirtan. So he and Narottam Das Thakur, they had their own particular style of kirtan, which means that a certain way the madangas are played, and cartels and beats, and certain moods are followed in the kirtan from Chaitanya to Krishna. And different times of the day, certain moods and octaves that he used, etc. And he also converted King Bihambir to Vaishnavism. Now, this King Bihambir, he was the king of... is that what it is? Yeah. It's yeah. I can get the exact name because it's a very famous place. Vishnupura. Vana Vishnupura. Has anyone heard of that? Vishnupura. I can't know more than you. It was on the... so it says here, after many months of travel, they approached Gaudadesh, Bengal, and rested the night in a small village named Gopalpur, just within the boundaries of the Mala kingdom of Vishnuvanapura. So it's in that area anyway. And
Bihar, near Bihar.
Is it? Yeah. Gujarat, thank you. And that king became gradually Srinivas Acharya found out that the king had taken the books, and he went there, and by his good qualities and his purity the king became convinced, and he also he spoke something of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and when the king heard that, although he'd been hearing the Bhagavatam from his pundit, when he heard Srinivas Acharya, his heart melted. He understood, oh, this is the real thing. And the king became converted, and the king made his whole kingdom a Vaishnava kingdom. And by law, you had to chant regular japa. And there were some, kings, there must have been insubordinate kings, who used to go in disguise and they would see if anyone's not chanting their japa. Then they would, give some penalty, because Vaishnava penalty, no good of jhana to you, something, But if they're really not going to chant, then maybe you should leave. Never had to leave the kingdom. Everyone there chanted, the whole kingdom. And they say it's the only place where Vaishnavism, Vaishnava cult, and culture and teachings was, there was no interference by any other religion at that. As we know, even in Bengal, you have the Qazi and this one and that one. So in this kingdom, it was just Vaishnavism. It was the only one. So it was quite a significant achievement by Srinivas Acharya. And the king made sure, because Srinivas Acharya initiated so many disciples, and by initiating so many disciples, that the king made sure that wherever he went with his, many, many, many disciples, that they always had everything that they wanted. And there were so many festivals. There were just continuous festivals, continuous initiations and celebrations and like that. It's very, very wonderful. Imagine that in a place like Melbourne, that the whole of Melbourne is Hare Krishna's. Festivals, just constantly, all over the whole, amazing. You go to the grand final, there's not football, it's kirtan, some plays, and some nice, unimaginable, pack the stadium with 100,000 people, instead of So Srinivasacharya, and another significant feature that, speaking of his disciples, he had one wife. His mother asked him to get married, and he followed that, especially because his mother was also a nice devotee. And he got married. He had two sons, and they both died. And then he had some daughters, and then he married again, and he had two sons who survived. But those children, they also accepted disciples, including his daughter. In fact, one of the most prominent gurus was his daughter Hemlata, I think her name is. Generally, as a social etiquette, even when women act as spiritual masters, they sometimes mostly accept women disciples, just as a social etiquette. But she initiated both men and women. So it depends upon the spiritual stature of the personality. As we know, as Prabhupada once said, they criticize Lord Chaitanya, they criticize me, don't expect they're not going to criticize you. So, sometimes just for the fact that avoiding criticism, it's best to follow the social convention. But when someone is just exceptionally powerful, like Srila Prabhupada, you can do all sorts of things, which are not been done before, and no one can speak a word against you properly, without making a fool of yourself. So, according to one spiritual stature, so it shows a precedent, which eventually in ISKCON we shall see that there will also be women spiritual masters, UBCs, and in every position. So, so we learn this from our acharyas. So anyway, I'm not going to go, because time's running out, I'm going to describe one of the internal pastimes, or two internal pastimes of the Lord, how Srinivasacharya met Srimati Radharani and joined in on the pastimes with Radha Krishna. So... So, therefore, the Gosyanandi is, in one sense, our external preaching work, and the Bhajananandi is our, not just our sadhana, but that sadhana should eventually be an internal meditation, gradually evolving to a proper understanding of our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Because we can't do that artificially, that's something that's, revealed by Krishna, by the spiritual master, at an appropriate time. But still, we can meditate upon that. We can meditate upon the mood of even the gopis in a general way. How is that? How do we align ourselves with the gopis of Vrindavan? One, we follow their exclusive devotion to Krishna. That's one way you can actually follow in the footsteps of the gopis. You meditate like that internally, that your devotion serves exclusive devotion to Krishna. Spontaneous love, very deep love, without any cessation. So, there are many different ways that each and every devotee can develop this internal mood of the gopis in a general way, which is, filled right throughout our books. We sing it, we say every morning, Ashley Shabha, Bhadra Dhammadasa, Mamadasa, Dhamkuru Dhavadi, Dhabha, Dhabha, Bhadra Lampadu, Mapananathasa, Sri Nampanaha. That verse is a verse of Srimati Radharani. I know Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so. even if he offers me nothing but his embrace, he makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything, for he's always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. If you imbibe that mood in your devotional service, you are imbibing the mood of Radharani, and that should be your internal method of devotional service. Okay. Am I following? Am I doing this Radharani? Am I doing the gopis? And I know I'm a Krishna center like that. There's no question of imitating one's eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna, especially as a gopi, if one cannot follow the Shishastakam, beginning with having faith in the holy name, and gradually, you know, step by step to the eighth verse of the Shishastakam. There's no question. Unless those moods are there fully, constantly, then any imitation that I am this gopi, I am that, is just complete nonsense. It's just complete mental speculation. But we follow the Shishastakam, we can, in fact, internally follow the footsteps of the gopis. Okay. So I'll read this pastime that once, while in Vishnu Manipura, Vana Vishnupura, Srinivas fell into trance while meditating on his form as Mani Manjari in the spiritual world. So he would chant japa for, you know, some hours every day, especially around the middle of the day. And during that time, he would, while he was chanting, he would also meditate upon his spiritual form and identity. And in this occasion, something very special happened. He fixed his mind on Radharani's water sports in Vrindavan with Krishna, because at lunchtime, at that time of the day, that's what Radharani does. If you look at the Ashtakaliya Lila, at that time of the day, that's what Krishna and Radharani are doing. You can't meditate upon that when Krishna's milking the cows and Radharani's cooking your breakfast. You know, you use different pastimes at different times of the day. So he fixed his mind on Radharani's water sports in Vrindavan with Krishna and their eternal associates. Rupa Manjari, so that's Rupa Goswami in his gopi form, noticed that Radharani's nose ornament fell into the water of the Jamuna. So this is what he's seeing in his meditation. Rupa Manjari winked at Guna Manjari, that's Gopalabhari Goswami, who, knowing the mind of Sri Rupa, dove on to look for the lost nose ring. It was unable to be found, so Guna Manjari engaged Mani Manjari, Srinivasacharya, in the search. Day and night, for 3 days without a break, Srinivas searched for the nose ring while in meditational trance. Meanwhile, his wives, the two of them, were beside themselves with grief, thinking he would die for lack of food and water. When the king heard the commotion, he also came running and became deeply concerned. The court physician examined Srinivas's body and found it to be healthy, yet did not know for how long he could go before his body deteriorated critically. Srinivas's first wife, Ishri, thought that Ramchandra Kaviraj should be called. So that's his intimate friend and disciple, also the intimate friend of Narottam Das Thakur. When he arrived and saw Srinivas's face, he assured everyone that they need not fear, for he was in a deep trance and would soon return to them all. Ramchandra Kaviraj, who was the embodiment of Mani, also the embodiment of Mani Manjari, also known as Karuna Manjari, so they were so intimately connected that they were practically considered the one soul, although there were two persons. they were like each other's other self. They're so intimately connected. So he sat in trance beside Srinivas and in this state appeared at the Jamuna to find Srinivas still looking for the nose ring. In his form as Mani Manjari's other self, he jumped into the river and helped Srinivas find the nose ring, which was hidden under a lotus leaf. At this same time, Radharani had finished her water sports and she began to dress in her beautiful blue sari. Her girlfriends assisted her to dress and decorate herself. When it was time to put on the nose ring, Gunamanjari confidentially looked at Mani Manjari, who, in perfect timing, came out of the Jamuna and delivered the lost ornament. At this time, Krishna arrived, and taking Srimati Radharani, he scurried off into the forest of Vrindavan. As the gopis and Manjaris watched the beautiful scene in complete amazement of the unparalleled beauty of the divine couple, their bodies were filled with spiritual ecstasy. At that time, Srinivas and Ramchandra broke their meditation. They turned to look at each other, and while embracing each other, they laughed like madmen and rolled on the ground with eyes full of tears of love. All the onlookers were in ecstasy to see Srinivas return to the external world, and they chanted loudly, Hari Hari. A large feast was prepared and enjoyed by the intimate associates who sat and heard the details of the pastimes that had just occurred. On another occasion, Srinivas was meditating on worshipping Mahaprabhu, who was seated on a jeweled throne. Srinivas anointed Mahaprabhu's body with sandalwood paste, then placed a garland of aromatic flowers around his neck and then began to carefully fan him with the chamara whisk. Looking at the Lord's magnificent form, he began to lose composure and ecstatic symptoms manifest in his body. This pleased Mahaprabhu, who placed the same garland of flowers around Srinivas's neck. With this, Srinivas's meditation broke, but the garland was still adorning his own neck. Its fragrance was unlike anything he had ever experienced. He quickly took off the garland and hid it in order to conceal this confidential pastime. On another occasion, in his meditations, he envisioned himself at the side of Radharani as she and Krishna were taking part in the holy Kela festival. Holy. Srinivas saw Radha and her gopi associates flinging dyes and squirting coloured waters at Krishna, bombarding him from all directions. Krishna, in turn, threw various kinds of dye at them. At the highest point of this battle, the gopis looked over at Mani Manjari, gesturing that she should come to their rescue. Mani Manjari then started to quickly supply Radhika with ample quantities of multicoloured powders, which Radha and the gopis used against Krishna. Krishna returned volley with even greater attacks. The conflict became so furious that the ground began to shake. In the midst of this, Srinivas's meditation broke, and upon returning to external consciousness, he realized that his body was covered with multicolored dyes from the spiritual pastimes. His family and disciples, seeing his condition, realized the perfect nature of his meditations. So I'll leave it there. So it's a few nice little pastimes. Any quick questions or comments? Maybe I'll take one. Satisfied. Shri Rasachari Ki Jai. Om Premanand.